For FingerLakes1.com, I'm Josh Durso, and this is Inside the FLX. This is another multi-part episode of the podcast that's coming your way. My guests are the two candidates running for Seneca Falls Town Supervisor. It's hard to argue that there is any community more divided over very few select issues in the Finger Lakes. Seneca Meadows Landfill, which operates in the town and pays it through a host agreement, is a big source of that divide. But like other communities, taxation, economic development, and quality of life improvements are big issues too. In part one, we sit down with Douglas Avery. He's a Democrat in this year's contest, and while he admits that the landfill was a driver for his entering politics, his experience on town council over the last 2 years propelled him to get more knowledgeable about day-to-day operation of a municipality like Seneca Falls. In part two, you're going to hear from Republican Mike Ferrara. But before we get to part one, a reminder that no matter where you're listening to us, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or the TuneIn Radio app, subscribing, following, and rating the podcast is the best way to let us know that you enjoy the show. Share this with your friends and family on Facebook or Twitter to keep the dialogue going. After you've subscribed to the podcast on your favorite platform, consider becoming a Patreon supporter too. That's going to help us keep the show going long into the future. Now, a quick break and my full conversation with Doug Avery. Today's episode is brought to you by Herman Brothers Furniture Store. Tired of the big box approach to furniture shopping? Stomp in to Herman Brothers Store located in downtown Lyons and see how they've been doing it since 1945. Herman Brothers carries one of the largest selections of furniture, appliances, and mattresses between Rochester and Syracuse. And even better, Herman Brothers services all of the furniture and appliances they sell. It's the honesty, integrity, and reliability that they've been delivering for 74 years. Stop in, shop online, or give Herman Brothers a call to learn more about their low prices, free layaway, interest-free financing, and no credit needed financing. They even offer same-day or next-day delivery in most cases. Visit HermanBrothersLyons.com or call 315-946-4831 today. So, first question, obviously, why are you running for town supervisor this time around?
I feel like since being on the board, and I'm not taking credit for everything, but I feel like in the last 2 years we've made some improvements as far as transparency, in the way that the public is treated, in getting some things done that you know, exploring other options for economic development and trying to engage tourism to a higher degree. And if we're going to continue to make progress, someone had to step up into the supervisor's chair. And I was reticent at first, someone has to do it.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at your own experience, not just on the board in the last 2 years, but then just sort of throughout your life, what are some of the qualities that you think make you best qualified to be town supervisor effective January 1?
I'd like to think I'm a reasonably intelligent person. I do get along with people. I work well with everybody that's on the board. I'll talk to anybody. We have a history of our town board meetings, for instance, being kind of belligerent toward the public, toward other board members. But actually, you know, I get along with people. I'm interested in the issues. I'm interested in, but not just the landfill, although that's where I got started with this. I'm interested. I've become engaged as being on the board for 2 years in the highway department, the water and sewer department, and everything else that goes on that you know, there were things that I'd never thought of before, but I've become fully immersed in, I think I bring some good ideas to the table.
And you mentioned town board meetings, which of course have drawn a lot of headlines over the last 2 to 3, 4 years. What could change or needs to change about those so that they can become more orderly, more functional, and really be an opportunity for the public to weigh in, talk to you guys, and then at the same time allow you guys to be able to do business and to get through them without having them sort of devolve into a mess on a monthly or semi-monthly basis?
You know, it's interesting, and I'm not laying this all at the supervisor's feet, but, you know, the September meeting, he didn't attend. And we got through the agenda just fine, but the atmosphere in the room, we engaged with the public during the meeting. We explained to the public during the meeting. There was no arguing. And even we're in the process of going through budget hearings trying to prepare the 2020 budget, and it's the same process. You know, there aren't many people that attend budget hearings. They're pretty dry to watch, but there are some, and you know, they've been free to offer input, and there's respect for each other. There's respect for those audience members that are there.
When you have been campaigning, talking to folks in the community, what are sort of the top two or three issues that you're hearing from folks? Maybe a couple of the things that are sort of maybe thus far flying under the radar a little bit in this election overall.
Taxes are a big issue, but I don't think that's flying under the radar. I think that's probably what would hit everybody in the face first. One of the things that we're getting complaints about as we go door to door is our recent attempts at code enforcement. And that perhaps the town is being, while we're well-intentioned about trying to clean up the town visually and aesthetically, perhaps we're being a little bit heavy-handed about it. And I think we're going to need to go back and look at it. We have had some brief discussions in these last two board meetings about the letter that gets sent out the first time someone is considered to be in violation, lightening up on people where the violation is simply that they haven't had a chance to mow their lawn yet this week because of the rain or because of their schedule or whatever. So I think we need to look at that again. But that was a surprise.
When you look at the town of Seneca Falls overall, what's the vision? What's the long-term vision for Seneca Falls broadly, and how you'll apply that to governing moving forward if elected?
I think it has to be tourist-based. We're not going to get large-scale manufacturing back. Those days, I'm afraid, are past. But we've got to have, first of all, a vibrant, active downtown with shops that are full. I think our future is tourist-based. You look at some of the other towns around us that are active and vibrant during the summer months and so on, and you know, we need to emulate that with our own style elements. But we need to become the best of what we see in Skinny Atlas and Auburn and Geneva and so on. We can do that.
So our first listener question of the hour comes from Seneca Falls, obviously, since this whole conversation is based on Seneca Falls. What's the plan to lower or stabilize taxes? If so, what does that plan look like?
Okay. I think taxes are stable at this point. And I know that 2 years ago, I was surprised. I wasn't on the board yet, but everybody was surprised when the board at the time decided that landfill money, to a large degree, would not be used for tax abatement. It still is to a small degree, but right now we're looking at I think last year we were able to come in slightly under the year before. I think we're probably looking at that again. We've gone through two of the four budget hearings. I think it's going to be tough. Energy costs are some out of our control, but they're very high. We just found out last night that workmen's compensation is going to go up tens of thousands of dollars, and that's nothing that we have any control over. So we're trying to compensate for that by making some wise cuts. There's still talk about, well, what are you doing? You're not using the landfill money to keep the budget down, but you increased our taxes and you're still getting the landfill money. What are you doing with it? And the answer to that primarily is infrastructure. We've done a lot of things in infrastructure in the last year, and my hope is that we'll continue that, and that's where the landfill money is going primarily, and people don't understand that. We've spent a lot of money this summer relining in place our residential sewers, particularly on the north side of town. And, people are aware of that if they live around it because they've been told and because there's a slight smell involved with the process. But other than that, it's just completely under the radar. And so there's this, what are you doing with our money? My hope is that our tax rate will, for the most part, support the budget And then we'll use the landfill money to make sure our infrastructure is in as good a shape as possible when landfill closure happens, hopefully in 2025 from my standpoint, and that we also take some of that and simply put it away for the future.
Is part of the problem here that the town really for a long time was too dependent on that landfill revenue without having a good plan for what they were going to do with it?
Absolutely. There was no plan for what we were going to do with it except to keep the tax rate down. But other than that, you can go back. The figures are all there, but mostly the taxes were used to keep the tax rate artificially low. And whenever there's something like that, sooner or later, that's going to end. And when it ends, it's going to hurt. And that's exactly what we went through 2 years ago. And at the same time, it was kind of like there was my perception is there was a bit of a kid in a candy shop kind of situation where we had the money, so go ahead and spend it. And so when it came time to buy some equipment, things like that, we were pretty free with it until the very end, and then that tightened up, and now we're behind in our capital asset replacement plans. And so we're being forced. We need two new snow plows this year, and that's about $250,000. And so, suddenly we're the lack of planning since the landfill payments started has kind of catching up with us.
Is that one of the things that you would focus energy on in those first 6 months to a year is coming up with sort of a broad plan that the town and the town board can use and follow over the next 4 years so that there isn't so much scrambling going on month to month?
We absolutely have to. There has to be long-term planning. Equipment aside, we need to start to work on replacing and updating our infrastructure. We've got water lines and sewer lines that are 100 years old, and we've reached a critical point where they need to be replaced, and it's going to be costly, and we need to get it done. Well, we've got the extra revenue, but there needs to be a plan. There needs to be a plan for what happens when the landfill payments stop, too, and hopefully, that's not too far down the line. They're responsible for some of the upkeep as far as the landfill itself is concerned, but what is the town going to do? How are we going to replace that revenue stream with grants, with new development? We need to be aggressively seeking to replace the landfill money and planning for the future.
So one more question related to Seneca Meadows before we sort of move on to a lot of other issues in this race. Local Law 3, obviously there's been a lot of talk about it, not as much over the last six or so months in terms of the policy. If you support it, how can it be strengthened, or is it good enough as is? What is the balance there, and how should Local Law 3 be approached, if the intent is to proceed forward with attempted closure?
Right. Well, the Article 78, is a procedural lawsuit. So they object to the way that law was passed. You can't go back and fix that. You can't go back and submit a different level of seeker evaluation. You can't go back and remove Annette Lutz's name from the law. And those are the kinds of things that Seneca Meadows is objecting to and is basing that Article 78 lawsuit on. The question is, of course, what happens if the judge strikes down Local Law 3 and we do it again? Then we will do it better. But I think we're in pretty good shape. But there's really not a whole lot we can do at this point to actually strengthen the law. We have to wait and see how the judge rules.
What does the town of Seneca Falls need to do differently in terms of economic development and sort of planning toward economic development in the future?
We need to. There's not a whole lot that can be done in terms of going out and finding manufacturing. That whole idea, maybe there are communities with greater resources that can have someone that's dedicated to that, but I would question how useful that's going to be or how successful they're going to be. So it's a pretty passive process in terms of what the town can do. I think we just need to be receptive, be ready to move quickly if someone does come, whether it's a hotel or a restaurant or a store, move quickly to if it's the right kind of operation, something that we're interested in, make sure the barriers are eased as quickly as possible. We need to make it, I think success breeds success, so we need to also take advantage of what we have, spruce up what we have, make it look like we are the successful community that we are, and hopefully that will bring even more.
Is the Seneca Falls Development Corp sort of an integral part to that plan and that process, or is Seneca Falls going to have to approach this a little differently moving forward?
I think they're part of the process. And I think in terms of particularly that process of guiding, taking a potential investor and guiding them through the process of working with the town, getting the permits they need and so on, that the SFDC can be a tremendous help there. They also do other things like the farmers market, and they're coordinating next year's 100th anniversary of suffrage, so they're tasked with a whole lot of different things. But the one thing that I see that they can do particularly to help in terms of economic development is simply to basically take the hand of a prospective investor and guide them through as quickly and as efficiently as possible so that the investor doesn't get frustrated and look elsewhere.
Another reader question that came in last week, what needs to be different, or what needs to be done differently to help advocate and improve the business district and then of course the downtown corridor, obviously both pretty important when it comes to economic development. Does anything need to be done differently there, or is it sort of approach it as it has been over the last 2 years?
I think this is again where SFDC can step in. I think we need to offer some opportunities, perhaps for some low interest loans or some grants to entrepreneurial style businesses, things that investors and developers that want to come in and put something in a storefront. We need to help, whether it's a kitchen lab or a gift shop. I mean, we need to again make things, strike down barriers as much as we can, and if that means helping out, that's the SFDC has the resources and the people to do that. Our downtown needs to be restored to its previous vibrancy. Having empty store after empty store, it's frustrating, it's depressing, and it doesn't breed success.
When we talk about taxes, particularly when we're talking about taxes increasing or even staying at historically higher numbers, whether it's an artificial increase or otherwise, frequently cuts and service cuts are two of the things that come up a lot. And I ask that because the Seneca Falls Police Department is one of those subjects that's frequently discussed as being too much of a burden on taxpayers. Right. So what would be your approach there? Would it be sort of business as usual, try to support it as much as the town can and can afford to? Or would it be change the way the Seneca Falls Police Department has to operate if funding just doesn't align?
Right, I think it's some of both. It's also there has to be an acknowledgement that Seneca Falls is not the community that it was in the 70s. You know, we all have this a fonder, different version in our memories of what Seneca Falls was like, and it's not. I mean, we've got serious crime problems, we've got serious drug problems. I think from my point of view, I don't think that the discussion of whether or not we should have a police station, a police department, is really tenable anymore. I think it's an obvious choice that we have to have a police department. At the same time, it can't be whatever the police department wants they get without complete justification. It can't be that the police department grows in terms of personnel without justification. But there's also, at the same time, there's if you actually look at the number of officers, the police department really hasn't grown since dissolution. There's an impression out there that they've kept adding officers, they've kept adding equipment, and in fact they haven't. As long as I've been there, if someone leaves, they're replaced. So if someone leaves, they are not, that position is not cut, which I think there's some support for. But you have to look at the fact that since dissolution, the police department has a much larger area to patrol, and you have to look at the character of the town and just look at the headlines and see that cutting back, I don't think, is the answer.
Next year is a census year, of course. Mm-hmm. That could potentially mean a shift in population numbers for a town like Seneca Falls. What would be one of the things that a lot of longtime residents of Seneca Falls have touted is that population has remained relatively flat in the grand scheme of things for a long time, and Seneca Falls has been sort of insulated from some of the headlines that we've seen around the state with mass exodus and loss of population. If the census next year bears out that there is a reduction in population, will there need to be sort of a shift in thinking and approach in how Seneca Falls broadly approaches all of the issues across the board, moving forward through the rest of you know, that 4-year term for town supervisor?
Right. There certainly would have to be. Unfortunately, there aren't, in terms of services. Certainly, the utilities. If there's a decrease in population, you can't decrease the service of the water and sewer department, or you can't stop repaving highways. So then you're back to, again, probably the police department to see if there's some cuts that could be made in light of the decreased population. I don't think you're going to find a significant decrease. I think we're going to find it's a different kind of population than perhaps the last census showed. But where we have room to cut and where the census figures would hold it up, then absolutely.
And our last question from a listener, would you consider forming community input groups to help grow engagement among voters and taxpayers across the board if elected?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that this is part of the frustration that since I started attending town board meetings is that the public has been shut out of the process. Unless you were a volunteer on the planning board or the zoning board of appeals or the HPC, you weren't involved in it. And in fact, in terms of the process, simply in the meetings, you were actually discouraged from participating. And that needs to change. There needs to be more conversation, and community advisory groups of all kinds would be a great place to start.
And last question of the hour, of course, differentiate yourself from your opponent. Obviously, we're getting closer to Election Day. There are some voters still who are undecided. Make the pitch for your campaign against your opponent.
I should have been prepared for this one. The thing that I think I bring most to the table is, and I'm not saying that Mike does not, so maybe this doesn't differentiate, but again, my strength, I think, is the way I work with people, the way I handle people. Obviously the environment is at the core of what I stand for in terms of being on serving the town. And I think there we differ. But in terms of the other things, as I said, I've become thoroughly engaged in these other issues. So, it can't be said that I'm a single issue person, and I'm proud of that. you know, I get along with and with you know, and work well with the highway superintendent and the water superintendent and you know, the assessor and the town clerk and these all these other offices, and I'm and it's just my personality, I guess, that I do, you know, get right in there and engage in conversation and work alongside them.
Folks want to learn more about your campaign or get a hold of you, how can they do that?
There is a Facebook page that has some of it. My first intent was not to let that become political, but it seems to have done that over the last couple of months, and hopefully right after the election that'll stop. Well, it will stop. Doug Avery for Seneca Falls is the website, and that has everything else.
Doug, appreciate the time. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, John.